It's time for Open Forum with Ken Hughey on News Talk 1230 KFJV.
Hi, welcome to Open Forum on this Monday morning on News Talk 1230 KFJB AM. Have you ever had one of those mornings? And I can't hear in my headsets. That's part of the problem. So anyway, but to make things right, we have Michelle Sponheimer with us this morning on Open Forum, our Housing and Community Development Director for the City of Marshalltown. It's been a while since we got to sit down and talk with her in depth. So here she is. How are you this morning?
Good morning. Good. It is one of those Monday mornings where you just kind of everything's off, you know, to a little different start, I think. It's start of the school year, all that kind of stuff,
I don't
right?
know what it is. It's been that way since I got up this morning.
Yep.
I knew it was going to be one of those days when I started to go out, I should probably have my glasses on if I'm going to drive to work. You know, it's those types of things.
It is.
So how busy are you? I know you've been busy. You have been busy for the last... Well, not that you weren't before the tornado,
right,
but I mean,
but it's just tenfold.
It's just tenfold. Is it still tenfold?
It is still really busy. You know, we're still definitely in a recovery period, coming off of still the tornado that we're working after, and then the derecho, and then you add COVID on top of it. You know, I tell people a lot of times, three disasters in 3 years, right? So, we're definitely still very, very busy right now. There's a lot going on. Really at the city, we have a lot of grant work that we're doing, but probably one of the biggest questions I get is about downtown buildings.
Right.
And because we still have a lot of buildings that are left with uncertain futures right now, and kind of people asking what's the status of those. So that's one of the big things we're working on recently.
And those are not easy processes to get completed because you're dealing with, in some cases, maybe most cases, an absentee owner who doesn't want anything to do with it, but that provides some legal hurdles for everybody else.
Yeah, absolutely. So the city is now, you know, responsible, the owner of several of the downtown buildings. Mm-hmm. You know, we have gone through legal processes to acquire those when they've been abandoned, is how we look at it. There's a Iowa code that allows a city to do that. And so we are now the owner as the city of several of the buildings, and we're working with some of them, trying to get FEMA approval to assist with demolitions. And in other cases, they're not FEMA projects, so we're working just on our end to take the steps necessary to do demolitions.
And there's nothing a city likes more than being a landlord.
Right?
Such as it is for the buildings, because they're really not habitable, occupiable, however you want to say it. And so that creates some additional legal loopholes that the city has to figure out how to get through there in order to make some progress.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, we are dealing, by the time we are involved with things, it is an issue where we have structural stability issues primarily, and dangerous situations. And so I often, you know, my staff will joke because they know when I've got a day where I got to go tromp through buildings because I wear my big tall rubber boots, you know, and, you know, because we've got a lot of situation where we've had, you know, roofs collapse. And so you think of all the rains and weather and stuff like that that's gotten into buildings. Those are big issues. We're dealing with asbestos. We're dealing with mold, things like that. So they're not easy situations. They don't happen quickly. And that's probably one of the biggest things people, you know, see things, they drive through downtown. I hear these comments, you know, people are like,
sure,
but it looks so bad, you know. It's a temporary state. And unfortunately, it does take a while. We know that, but know that we're working on it.
And I know there was quite a bit of discussion about the building at Main and First Street.
Mm-hmm.
There on the northwest corner,
northwest,
if I have my directions,
yeah,
right.
Yeah.
Because
101.
Because, you know, a lot of people don't want to see those buildings go away because they have been part of the downtown fabric.
Mm-hmm.
But that location's just an example that sometimes it's just better to bite the bullet and say, okay, let's take it down and see what else we can do with it, instead of trying to, in some instances, pour more bad money,
right,
after more bad money.
Right, yeah. You know, I think it's deceiving sometimes when you see the buildings and you're walking down the street. It looks, that particular building, and, you know, looks relatively stable. You think, oh, well, that should be fine. But when you get in there, you realize that the roof has collapsed on the second floor. Almost, you know, a good half of it almost has been collapsed. The moisture and mold is incredible in there. And then based on our structural engineer's report, there's failures and leaking in through the walls and stuff like that. So, you know, what looks like on the surface should be easily repairable is not always the case. And there's a lot to it.
One final question on that particular subject. Have you and the city gotten a lot better about trying to figure out what to do with the neighboring walls of the neighboring buildings and that? Because that was a process post-tornado that you're still dealing with and still looking at those things as we've had more and more buildings get damaged thanks to Mother Nature.
Yeah, shared walls in downtown buildings, you know, because they constructed off of each other a lot of the times, and so they didn't necessarily have their own separate wall, is a big issue. And so we're trying, as we prepare specifications for demolition, to really think about that neighboring wall and what needs to be done to protect it as much as possible. And then we do still have some grant funds to help make repairs as well to some of those properties.
And Michelle just said the magic word, grants, because she is probably shoulder deep in grants, and we will talk about that as we continue with Michelle Sponheimer on Open Forum. It's now 20 before 9 on News Talk 1230 KFJB AM and 93.9 FM.
T-Mobile is bringing a new choice in coverage and value to your hometown. We've been investing billions to light up our award-winning 5G network in more places than ever, bringing our fast, affordable, and reliable network to you. Whether you're in a big city or a small town, great coverage is just the start. That's right. From high-speed mobile hotspot data to weekly deals and giveaways to nonstop streaming of your favorite shows, our customers get tons of great benefits. That means you can do more of what you love. Say hello to a new choice in wireless. T-Mobile.
Check out your new neighborhood store in Marshalltown, across from Marshalltown Mall, to learn more about T-Mobile's award-winning network and great benefits. There's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Stop by today.
Qualifying service required. Capable device required for 5G. Coverage not available in some areas. Video typically streams at 480p. Some uses may require certain plan or feature. See T-Mobile.com.
Hi, I'm Dave Thompson for Thompson True Value. If you're tired of the big box grills that you throw out after a short time, it's time to step up to the quality of Weber. Thompson's carries the area's largest selection of Weber grills. The two-burner Spirit E210 starts at only $469. Also, check out the new Genesis 2 lineup, assembly already included at Thompson True Value. And we have charcoal grills, including the 22-inch Weber Original Grill for just $119, and a charcoal 18-inch Original Kettle Grill for $99. For tailgating, check out the Smoky Joe Premium for $47.99. Thompson True Value also sells a full line of replacement parts for the Weber gas or charcoal grills, as well as a full line of accessories such as digital thermometers, vegetable baskets, covers, and more. Stop by and say hello and see our new store at 106 South Center Street in downtown Marshalltown with its convenient layout and location. I like to say, park at the door and into the store. Thompson True Value, behind every project, is a true value.
Welcome back to Open Forum. It's 8:42 on News Talk 1230 KFJB AM and 93.9 FM. We are visiting this morning with Michelle Sponheimer, who is the Housing and Community Development Director here in Marshalltown. And I know grants have always been a part of that position, but you must just be a grant wizard by now, because not only are you writing a lot of grants, you're having quite a bit of success in obtaining those grants. So, you know, that's kudos to you. But to me, the grant process would probably make my eyes glaze over. Do you ever feel like that?
It does. I get an eye twitch sometimes. So if you ever notice my eye kind of twitching away, that's usually why.
Oh, you're not winking at me at city council meetings or anything. Okay, got
no,
it.
It's twitching season. Yeah. No, it is. It's, you know, I actually really enjoy grant writing. It is probably one of my favorite things that I do, which just makes me a little bit of weird, I guess. But, you know, it's neat to see the different projects that we can get into the community through various grants, whether they're state or federal. We've been really successful with things. Mm-hmm. And but administration is always hard. You know, that's a whole nother component. Once you write it, it's sometimes the easiest step. It's the administration of it, which is the long haul of getting everything done that you say you're going to do. And right now with between COVID and the Recovery Act funding, you know, there's a lot of money that's becoming available to states and federal agencies and ultimately down to cities. And so it's making some new opportunities that we didn't have before, which means extra work. So,
but extra work to keep everything moving along. What is it, you know, because a lot of people, you know, including me, you know, don't have a lot of experience or maybe don't have a concept of grant writing. Is there, can you say, is there an average time it takes you to complete a grant and get it submitted, or does it depend upon the grant?
It really depends upon the grant. You know, they can vary. The federal grants are very extensive. You know, they can be 20, 30 pages of narrative and then several hundred of attachments. And then you can have another more of a local, you know, grant that's maybe only a couple pages of mm-hmm. question answer and a couple of attachments. So they really do vary significantly. We've been working on a Great Places grant and a community and attraction tourism grant recently between Jessica and I. And I think the two of us collectively spent at least a solid week on each of those recently, kind of working through narrative questions and attachments and making sure you have all those things in order that you need to do to check all the boxes so that you can be considered. Because, you know, if you are missing something out of that requirement, then your application is just put to the side. You know, they're not going to call you and say, hey, you forgot this. You're just eliminated.
And then there are the grants that have some, I don't want to say gotchas, but they've got contingencies with them, or things that the city or the grantee is going to have to come up with locally in order to be considered as well. And I think a lot of people forget about those kind of grants where, yeah, we'll give you several hundred thousand dollars, but you got to come up with your own six figures worth.
Yeah, definitely. A lot of the time a matching component is required with grants. You know, with some of the transportation related ones that we do are maybe an 80% grant funding, 20% local match. Sometimes those match dollars can be matched from other entities. Sometimes they can't. So sometimes it does have to come out of your local budgets. So those are, yeah, all those pieces that we have to look at. And they definitely all have contingencies and things that you have to do to satisfy administering the grant as well.
So what is your percentage of success rate when it comes to grants? Have you ever stopped to figure that out?
I do. I keep track of every grant I do. And so we've had, I have been involved with successfully about $27 million at this point in my career here. And we have a pending application right now for just over $20 million. So that'll bump it way up if we are successful with that raise grant from the DOT here. We'll hopefully find out this fall. You know, we tend to be successful about a 63-65% rate of what we're applying for. So that doesn't mean, usually it's kind of an all or nothing. You get it or you don't. Mm-hmm. Very few are, mm-hmm. they give you partial. But yeah, I do like keeping track because I think it's, you know, it's neat to see how much has come into our community for different projects.
And I know you mentioned the American Rescue Plan Act and funds that are available there. Have we finally reached to the point where you've got all the information you need to do that? Because I know for a while things were continually changing. You'd get some information. They go, well, wait a minute, but then there's this, which unfortunately is the way the federal government seems to work sometimes. Oh,
yeah.
Did I say that?
Yeah.
So is it basically all grounded now and you've got that foundation on which to build when it comes to requesting those types of funds?
I think, you know, Jessica's been working a lot on that project and I think we'd have a pretty solid feel. I'm never going to say we're 100% because I think those dollars are going to always have a little bit of uncertainty to them, mm-hmm. being that they're tied to a new thing and how it's going to come down long run. You know, we expect that down the road several years, you might have follow-up on audits and things like that where there might be opportunities where it's like, okay, did we use that appropriately, making sure that it was done. So, you know, Jessica's wonderful at going through all those details and making sure that we're being conservative with what we're doing so that we feel confident that it is eligible costs mm-hmm. and that we're going to use the money appropriately. That is our first priority. So we think we have some good projects lined up.
Now, if I remember right, the $21 million you just referenced is for the North 3rd Avenue project, which there was a lot of work that was being done prior to July of 2018. So you probably have had to do a lot of juggling with some of that. And did how much did that throw things? I know it threw things off a lot. Can you actually say how much it threw you off once you got to the tornado, and then you added COVID, and then you added the derecho? Because all of a sudden, folks are going, oh, yeah, there's that North 3rd Avenue thing we were talking about 4 years ago.
Right, yeah. Yeah, it definitely did. In some ways, though, it also helps. And that sounds like a weird thing to say, that, you know, a disaster can be helpful. But it does add a priority, emphasis, and urgency to things when you're applying for grants, because we had a situation, we had a disaster. So, you know, the damages that were caused can kick up our project as something that's more important, maybe than some other projects where they don't have to have that recovery aspect. So although it sets us back in mm-hmm. some ways, there's also that silver lining of disaster where new opportunities come forward that may not have been there before. So, you know, we're hopeful that the progression, you know, will continue, mm-hmm. that we'll get funded with that project. And then that would likely be maybe a start of 2022, 2023 project that would occur. We also will have a lot of downtown stuff happening.
Sure.
And some of that is potentially being covered by the American Rescue Act dollars. There's also a new EDA grant that's related to the infrastructure and some of those kind of things that are coming. And so hopefully we'll be able to tap into some of those dollars that are available and keep it moving forward, even though it might not be exactly the pace that we had thought.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes it's accelerated.
Talk about the Brownfield grant. That came up a couple of months ago, and I know a lot of folks aren't familiar with Brownfield. I got a very, very small taste of that when I was in the shopping center business. But those are interesting projects because you're really taking something that's not usable and trying to make it into something that is usable, right?
Yeah, brownfields are, you know, a term that's used when we're talking about sites that often are do or have a perception of containing some environmental hazard. So our older buildings, certainly asbestos is our most common one that we're mm-hmm. used to, lead paint, places that have had petroleum, you know, oils or other hazardous materials used as part of a manufacturing process or things like that. So buildings that often maybe are underutilized, maybe have been vacant sites or anticipated to be sites that have hazardous conditions are considered brownfields. And redeveloping those sites is harder to do than going into what we consider a greenfield space, you know, the grassy area on the south edge of town, right?
Right.
You know, it's easy to develop there. Developing an infill site on a pre-existing site that's been other things is more challenging. And so the brownfield grant that we received will help us do assessments of some of those type of sites. So we're really looking at areas in the downtown. We're going to be working with Unity Point, talking about some of their facilities mm-hmm. as they're relocating, trying to do some assessment to see what we're up against so that as new development looks at a site, we know what the history is.
And we'll talk about some of those other things. She mentioned lead programs. We'll talk about that and more as we continue our conversation with Michelle Sponheimer on Open Forum at 8:51 on News Talk 1230 KFJB AM and 93.9 FM.
McGregor's Furniture and Mattress announces their truckload Rustonic mattress sale on now. Save up to 50% off on all sizes, styles, and comforts. Rustonic twin mattresses start at only $99. Queen mattresses starting at $399. Many items in stock and ready for delivery or pickup. Shop and save up to 50% now during the Rustonic Mattress Sale at McGregor's Furniture and Mattress, downtown Marshalltown. Open 7 days a week, interest-free financing available, and free local shipping.
You are sure of her love and yours. Now it's time to choose the right ring. At Hilberg's Jewelers in downtown Marshalltown, we have been helping couples say I do for 122 years. You are sure to find a ring that not only says I love you, but also in a style that she will love just as much as she loves you. If the big question is in your future, look to Hilberg's Jewelers in downtown Marshalltown.
White or wheat, classic or old-fashioned, with or without sesame seeds. With so many choices, selecting the right bun for perfectly grilled burgers, hot dogs, and brats can seem overwhelming. Baked right here in the Midwest, the bakers at Village Hearth made your choice easy. As long as you see the familiar Village Heart logo on the package, you know you're selecting the freshest, most flavorful buns available. Village Heart Buns, baking our best for you.
Hi, I'm one of the business experts at U.S. Cellular. How can I help?
Hi, I'm looking for solutions for my small business.
With U.S. Cellular, you can get 6 lines for only $19.99 a month per line. Plus, you can get fast, reliable, failover internet.
That's amazing.
Yep, and we offer landline replacement. Here, take my business card.
It says switch and get 6 lines for only $120 a month?
Yeah, helping small business is our business.
U.S. Cellular, America's locally grown wireless. Visit a store today.
Taxes, fees, and terms apply. See uscellular.com for details.
Open Forum on a Monday morning on News Talk 1230, KFJB AM and 93.9 FM. Michelle Sponheimer, our Housing and Community Development Director, with us this morning, and a program that's been going on for quite a while that you keep bringing back and keep using to great success is the lead-based paint program, and it's still going on.
It is. It's still going on. We're in our sixth grant award, which is great. We've been operating this program since 2003. And multiple millions of dollars of work that's been done in our community. The program is based for families that have children under the age of 6 who live in homes that are built before 1978. So we do work on rental properties and owner-occupied properties. We are accepting applications right now for that grant program. And we will be for into next year, possibly a little bit longer if we're granted an extension. But it's been a little challenging program this year with the supply costs, construction materials going up, contractors shortage between all of our disasters, like we've talked about, and then COVID concerns as we talk about being able to access homes and people feeling comfortable and managing, everybody who may have been exposed or not and those kind of things. It's been a little bit more challenging this grant round, but we're working through it. And we do have funds available, and we're looking for applicants.
Are you still looking for applicants for Section 8 housing? I know you talked with Kyle about that a couple months or more ago, and that's been rather unusual in recent history to not have a waiting list for Section 8 housing. Are we still in that same
situation? We are still in that same boat. I think that a lot of the COVID relief funding that has supported tenants, the moratoriums on evictions and some of those things that are happening have allowed people some graces and not maybe needing some of the assistance. But as we see those moratoriums ending and evictions start to occur and people still struggling to pay rents, know that we do have assistance programs available. We prioritize preference for elderly, disabled, and households with children who live in our jurisdiction, which is all of Marshall, Tama, and Hardin counties. So it is a 3-county program that we run. And our waiting list is very short right now. You can generally be called in within a month of applying. And so that's a lot better than the year or so that we previously. And so we encourage people to apply, or if you know somebody who's struggling with rent or going to be struggling with rent, maybe due to some job loss or things like that, send them our way.
And I understand, well, I don't understand, I know that another project on your plate and some of the other is updating the zoning laws and regulations in the city because, hey, things change.
Things change. And, it's been a long time since we've done kind of a comprehensive zoning rewrite, and it sparked with some of our downtown guidelines and some other things that we've been working on. So we're still in the midst of that. Our goal is still to kind of have that adopted by January 2022 or in January. And so it's a big process. You'll be seeing more about it here in the next few months as we start to finalize some drafts.
When it comes to trying to renovate, revitalize, especially the downtown area and some of the areas that were hit harder by the tornado and then the derecho and others. If you think back pre-tornado, would you ever imagine you'd be going through some of the stuff and be working on, like you said, accumulating $27 million in grants with another $21 million plus pending. You probably would have been bumfuzzled a little bit by that.
Yeah, absolutely. I never would have anticipated. And I think it's been a lot of good information and learning. I said going through a disaster makes you prepared for their next one. And I hope to never go through another. This has been enough for me, as it has for most of our community. But we know that we're at least ready and we can do it and work through it. We've been fortunate to have Department of Homeland Security at the state level and FEMA supporting us on a lot of projects and working through those things. And we hope that we hear some positive news from them soon.
Well, we hope so, because you've helped provide a lot of positive news between you and everybody else at the city staff to get us where we are. And it's not going to happen tomorrow, is it?
No, it's not. So be patient with us. Right. We do have a great team with the department heads leading and all the city employees that are doing day-to-day work. Everybody's really working for the best things for our community, and we're getting there. But yeah, be patient, as those things take time.
Michelle Sponheimer, our Housing and Community Development Director, thanks for all the updates. We appreciate your time.
Absolutely.
And thank you for being with us on Central Iowa Today on News Talk 1230, KFJB AM and 93.9 FM.